This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. There's been a lot of news around Indiana schools and how they're handling the spread of COVID-19 in their classrooms, from mandating masks to not reporting COVID cases. To give us an update on how schools are doing right now, we're joined by Eric Weddle, Managing Editor for the Education Desk at WFYI. Welcome, Eric. Well, let's talk about the latest news here when it comes to COVID in schools. What's the biggest news around quarantine guidelines in Indiana schools?
Right. So earlier this month, we had a change of guidelines from the state health department. And one of the big issues they wanted to really focus on was the quarantining of students. And basically what that means is, you know, right now, or until recently, a lot of students were being sent home for, you know, a week, 10 days, 2 weeks, if they found out that they were in close contact to maybe a student or a teacher at their school who tested positive for COVID. And so there was a lot of concern about that. So these guidelines are now allowing, it's kind of basically like reduced the amount of quarantining time almost down to zero that some students and staff now have to do with this new system.
And so what is the new system exactly with the guidelines on quarantining?
Yeah, so school districts now are basically, they can allow students who are asymptomatic. So now asymptomatic students and staff who are identified as being in close contact do not have to quarantine. And the state defines close contact as someone who's within 6 feet of another person who may have had COVID-19 for 15 minutes or so. But the school district has to require a face covering mandate. So you have to be wearing a mask all day in your school for this no quarantining policy to count.
Okay, so just to clarify, what I'm hearing here is that if you don't want to have a mask mandate in your school, you would have to
quarantine.
Okay.
Yeah. So basically, school districts that have not made a mandate and they're not requiring it all day, those school districts are going to have to quarantine their students. School districts that are requiring a mask to be worn throughout the entire day, they can decide to no longer quarantine students who have been in close contact with somebody with COVID.
That's interesting. There's just two different, I guess, paths schools can go down. Well, there's been some concern about schools potentially losing funding for having students do remote learning for too long. Can you talk about those concerns?
Yeah. So there's, you know, two different kinds of schools, not two different, but there's basically, you have in-person schools, traditionally brick and mortar schools, we call them, and virtual schools, you know, and that's nothing really new. Indiana has, since the creation of virtual schools, Indiana has always funded them at a lesser amount of the per student funding. And right now, virtual schools who offer full-time virtual learning, they fund students at 15% less as students who attend brick and mortar schools. Last year, when the pandemic happened, everybody went virtual. You know, remote learning was what everyone was doing. Nothing in the law allowed those schools basically to be funded, the brick and mortar schools to be funded at 100%. So lawmakers heard the concerns. They realized it was a different year. It was a change nobody expected. So they changed the law. They allowed last year for full funding to be given to brick and mortar schools who had students being remotely. Well, that expired for this year. So there's been concern again that as we have students quarantining, the unknown future of this year, that you could have more and more students going remote learning. And if you spend more than half your time in remote, the state views you as a virtual student and would fund you at a lesser amount.
Well, that's interesting. I was wondering about that. You know, if the inevitable happens where people start going back online, if cases continue to rise, that would create an issue. But I mean, is online learning a cheaper alternative overall, though? I mean, even if it's less funded?
Well, I mean, it would be, you know, if you think about, I mean, I don't know the intimate details, but if you have a school that's virtual all the time, they definitely have different infrastructure than an entire school district that is still running buildings, heating buildings, having staff. So that's where the concern has been, though lawmakers have come forward so far and said that they are planning to do a change again this year to ensure that brick and mortar schools are going to get funded fully if they wound up doing remote learning.
If you have any questions or comments for the show, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. We're speaking with Eric Weddle, Managing Editor for the Education Desk at WFYI, about COVID-19 in classrooms and what's the latest in Indiana. Well, Eric, what are COVID numbers looking like at schools right now?
Right. Well, the past few weeks, you know, we've seen some record numbers, but the numbers just came out earlier today, about an hour ago, and we're seeing about 5,000 new positive cases in the schools. And that is less than we have seen, you know, the past few weeks. So there seems to be a little bit of a decrease right now. I mean, I think a lot of schools testing, you know, still seems to be an issue. I know there's a lot of talk about why there's not more testing of schools, and some schools are trying to figure that out. But we have seen, you know, a pretty consistent, you know, high number since schools, you know, started really coming into full swing in the past like 4 to 5 weeks.
Well, there's been some concerns at school districts across the country and here in Indiana about schools not reporting COVID cases or not keeping it up to date. Is that something that's that's happening here?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at right now on the school distribution map that's available on the state website that shows where cases at. You know, today there are 627 schools that have not reported a case. And, you know, I know I've actually heard from some educators who have kind of been frustrated with people discussing that, kind of pointing it out, kind of saying, hey, we have a lot to do, you know, why should you expect us to keep doing all these additional things? But then you think of the other side where people just want to know, like, what is actually happening in our communities? So there doesn't really seem to be any kind of like accountability, and no one's in place to force these school districts to do it. I mean, even like on the local level, you have some school districts that publish this weekly. You can get it easily. Other school districts, it's not being discussed at all. So I think, you know, there is just, I think, a general concern, you know, as a journalist reporting on schools, you want to know what's going on. And it would be great if there is a way for schools to have an easier way, I think, to report this so everyone knows what's happening.
So do you think it's on the school's end that it's difficult to post this, or there's no sort of, I don't even know if it would be like some rule or law that mandates that they have to report cases, you know?
Daily, you know, I mean, I think, I mean, it needs to be, I mean, obviously, you know, a lot of cases are being reported to the state. The state has its own data. You know, my family has had, we've experienced COVID, and when it was reported, you know, we had phone calls and there was tracing going on. So there's a lot of information out there that tracks who has COVID, where they're from. There obviously seems to be an issue with how easy it is for schools to do this. You know, I've even spoke, you know, to children on my own, staff my own school that are just kind of overwhelmed in general, you know, like tracing the kids, figuring out who has been in contact and who's not. There just seems to be a lot more work that schools are faced with, you know, during this time. And it's just making them much harder to do it. Requiring it, making a rule, you know, I'm not sure how that would work for each district. I think everyone's under a different amount of stress and pressure right now.
Right. I mean, I'm imagining you're a teacher, but then all of a sudden you have to be a professional contact tracer at the same time. It's got to be a lot.
Yeah. And then, you know, we have the local health departments, you know, some local health departments have tracked it. You know, there's been issues here in Marion County with the information being available publicly, because we had the local hospital that had a ransomware attack, and that even limited some of that information being made. So it's very complex. But I think there is frustration overall that, you know, it's September 2021. We've been into this for about a year and a half. Why isn't this easier to do?
Are we seeing any pushes for vaccines to be mandated for students or school staff?
I mean, mandate, you know, no, I have not seen that or not hearing about that, especially in public schools. I mean, right now there really can't be mandates made due to the status of the vaccines. You are starting to hear more school districts talk about providing incentives. Indianapolis Public School District has mentioned that they want to provide incentives for students. They have not come out with what that is, but they are now offering cash reward, bonus, or what have you, to staff now who can prove that they are vaccinated. So you're seeing different ways to do that. I've seen some school districts in filings with the state saying that they're going to use some of their federal COVID pandemic money to also offer bonuses to staff to do that. So I think right now, you know, schools are trying to do everything they can to keep students in class to keep people learning in person. And I think trying to convince more and more teachers and students to get vaccinated is one way that they're doing that.
Do you think Indiana's going to look to any other school districts? I think it's Los Angeles. The school board there voted that, that students 12 and above have to be vaccinated to go to school. Do you think that would ever have an effect here in Indiana?
You know, I mean, I really can't say, but I mean, last week, you know, when President Biden came out with, you know, his order for, you know, businesses, certain sizes of businesses to vaccinate their employees, to have them get vaccinated. You know, we saw the Attorney General of Indiana and, you know, the governor come out and say that they did not agree with that kind of an order coming down. So I don't really see that happening here in Indiana.
Do you think there's a chance we will see remote learning make a comeback, or are schools now sort of just in the place of, like, we're just going to learn to live with COVID around us?
You know, I think it's still a wait and see. I mean, I talked to a lot of educators, you know, who they're planning, like, how do we do this now? You know, so many schools were really prepared last year to do remote. You know, they had everything in place. And some of that infrastructure exists. But I think people went into the school year with a totally different kind of mentality. They, you know, felt like it was going to be much more normal. And so I feel like now I'm hearing from teachers that, like, they're, you know, they're getting ready to go remote if they have to, because we just don't know what's going to change. And I think that's the uncertainty, I think, is what is causing a lot of unease with the teachers that I've spoke with and school leaders. You just don't know what's going to happen. But I think most people, everyone agrees that I talk to, you know, they want to find a way to keep kids in school as much as possible. You know, some school districts really aren't even offering those remote options that they did last year, just because it was so taxing on their staff.
What about students and parents, before we let you go here? Are they excited about staying in person or virtual?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm on a lot of different, you know, Facebook groups for families and students. And you know, there are a lot of families who are very concerned still, you know, about COVID, about how it can get into schools, about how through sports or extracurricular activities, you know, their students can get it, or they can bring it home and transmit it to family members. So there is that concern. But I think, you know, people want their kids in school learning face to face. And that proves, I think, to be, you know, the best way for students to learn.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Eric Weddle is the managing editor for the Education Desk at WFYI. Just ahead, we'll check in with a guest who is paving the way for formerly incarcerated individuals. If you have any questions or comments for the show, you can let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Soe. Back in 90 seconds, this is All In. The winner of a business pitch contest for formerly incarcerated individuals was on our program shortly after her win. We're checking back in with her a year later to get an update on her business and her thoughts on the program that helped her get started. With us now is Tashina Clark, the founder of Taste Buddies and winner of the 2019 Reentry Entrepreneurship Development Initiative's Business Pitch Contest. Tashina, it's so great to have you with us today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So you were on the program a year ago or so. I was not the host then, so please forgive me if you feel like you're going to be repeating your story over again. But for myself and the audience that may not have heard your story, how did you get involved with the Reentry Entrepreneurship Development Initiative?
So I was incarcerated in the Indiana Department of Correction back in 2018. The reentry program was a program that they offered for everyone in there that was thinking of, when they were released, starting a business. Luckily for me, I got in right in the nick of time. It was kind of crazy. Like, I thought I wasn't going to get in. I applied for the program, and then probably like 8 weeks before I was released, I was able to get in the program.
That's amazing. So what made you want to get involved in it? What was it that sparked your interest?
So what has sparked my interest is I had already started trying to start up a business of my own. And then I got that halt, which caused me to go to the Department of Corrections. So like when I was incarcerated with them, I had like an article organization. I had my business cards and I had my mason jars and just the idea. I didn't have anything else. And then me being a part of the program helped me kind of like finalize where I wanted to be with things and where I wanted to go.
That's great. I mean, it sounds like you already had an idea and you were already planning on this. Was there anything that the READY program taught you that you didn't already know?
Yeah, they taught me a lot. So I thought opening a business was really simple. I knew it was kind of complicated, but the knowledge that I got from them helped me acquire different assets that I needed to make my company more of an asset company instead of a liability. I learned knowledge as far as like registering everything with the Department of Revenue, trademarking my business, how to market my business, how to pitch, of course. Like you said, I did win the pitch last year, so I was learning how to pitch, just learning how to become a better entrepreneur and network with the stipulations that I had behind me and still pushing forward.
Well, I'm definitely going to probably ask you for some tips because this is very interesting to me. I'm like, I would love to start a business too, but it sounds so like intimidating. What was your favorite part of this program?
My favorite part was Neil Metzger. He was the program manager at the time / director. It's crazy. You know, a lot of people think about when they hit rock bottom or have that tough spot in life. A lot of people think of a lot of things. Well, my rock bottom was me sitting in prison. Yes, I know that I had the credentials that will take me further. And I know that this halt can either limitate things, but the encouragement and the just spunk that Neil gave me every day, it was like I was out on free. It was like I was walking the ground free and I didn't have any stipulations. I mean, he went from telling me how to get a building to bringing in applications. And I'm like, okay, Neil, I'm still incarcerated. And it was just like the push. So someone else believed in me and it made me believe in myself a whole lot more.
That's amazing. I think, yeah, there's always that need for someone to kind of push you a little bit. Like you have the idea, but someone's got to kind of push you sometimes. What was your pitch like?
It was scary. I never, like I said, never did pitch. New to the business industry. So my pitch, it was what? I think we had maybe 5 to 10 minutes to do it. So I just know that I wanted to make sure that when I left the room, a lot of people will not only remember what I was speaking about as far as my business, but what I was speaking about from my heart. A lot of people ask me, like, how did I come about creating Taste Buddies and coming up with Taste Buddies and a name for it? And I tell them it came from a broken heart. You know, a lot of people don't understand when I say a broken heart. You know, they're like, oh, somebody left her or, oh, she lost this. No, my heart was just broken and I fell in love with my own business and myself again, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool. I mean, just to hear how it all came together. And so when it comes to putting a pitch together, what is it like putting a business pitch together? I mean, there's so many different types of pitches.
Yeah, there is. There are so many different types of pitches. When you put a pitch together, you want to mainly concentrate on your selling your business plan in like 5 minutes, catching their attention in 5 minutes, letting them know exactly what you're doing, why you're doing it, what's your passion behind doing it, and who do you target on marketing while you're doing it, or what change do you want to do while you're creating your business? At first, I was thinking about a lot of organizations that I had worked for in the past, and I'm like, okay. And then I just thought about when I pitched, telling my story. And that's exactly what my pitch was. It was just my story. You know, I didn't fabricate a lot of things. And I just told what was on my heart about why I opened my business.
Yeah, I think that shows, you know, when you're genuine, people can really appreciate your story. And so when it came to the pitch and your business, can you tell us more about, you mentioned it's called Taste Buddies. What is your business and what were you pitching?
So I am the founder of Taste Buddies LLC. I do salads, soups, and desserts in a mason jar, which is completely healthy. So when I pitch, I generally was pitching like, hey, say you have a 30-minute break and Uber Eats estimates 15 minutes or 45 minutes. What's going to be your Taste Buddies? And then I just went into the spell of who I was and generally what Taste Buddies was created by. Like I said, again, it was created by my broken heart. It also spoke on the passions that I had and the influences that I had as well. As for my wife, she helped me with my culinary experience before I jumped into culinary business. Some of my recipes are family recipes from my family. So generally I just sold family history and I just turned it into a business.
Well, you won the contest, as we mentioned earlier. What was it like seeing your idea turning into a possible reality? What was it like when you won it in terms of, were they like, okay, here's all the tools you need, we're going to help you start your business? Or did you actually have to take it into your own hands?
So after that, I still have my business coach. I still network and coincide with Neil and Emily, which are a part of Indie Chamber. I am still a part of Indie Chamber. But when I did win, it wasn't no, here's your money and you go. They still offer help. They still offer classes. They still offer avenues to help me get ready for my startup.
Well, what you mentioned that Taste Buddies, it's soups. Did you say soups, salads, and desserts in a mason jar?
Yes, ma'am.
How did you come up with that idea or even find that passion for cooking up these types of recipes?
So I thought about being different. I do have a construction background. So in my industry, when I do construction, we're limited to what we eat. We're limited to the time. We're limited to how much we can eat. And that kind of critiqued the idea a little bit. But before I jumped into construction, I was working at a golf course out in Noblesville called Pebblebrook. And it was kind of weird. I never worked at a golf course. And they had a diner. And they had like a little small full kitchen. And they served soups through the summer. And I'm like, dude, it is hot as heck. And people really eating soups in the summertime. So like me getting the idea of selling the soup year round came from them. But the passion all in general came from myself, like me with my culinary background, working in different areas, looking at how they presented their menu. So I wanted to present my menu and be different. Like how many people eat dressless salads? I don't really know too many people. Well, just the people who come and order from Taste Buddies, they have experienced a dressless salad, you know, and like some things that I say about my menu catches people's eyes like, dressless, what? How, you know, and then that brings traction.
That's really cool. Well, if you have any questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. Again, that's 866-476-3881. We're speaking with Tashina Clark, the founder of Taste Buddies and the winner of the 2019 Reentry Entrepreneurship Development Initiative's Business Pitch Contest. So if you look back to a year ago when you were last on this program to now, what are some of the changes that have gone through with your business, or has anything significant occurred?
Yes. So looking forward to October the 1st, Taste Buddies will be in a commissary kitchen. So Taste Buddies has finalized everything to be an open organization. That was a big leap for me. A lot of hard work, a lot of research and investments. But in here, 2 weeks maybe? I will have a location where people can come order and receive food from Taste Buddies. So that's a big accomplishment for me.
Oh, congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you.
So has the pandemic had any effect on your business, or was it, I wonder if it was not as bad just because people can take these containers and go.
Right. So it did kind of have a damper on everything due to the pandemic, like a lot of commissary kitchens closed, a lot of resources for access for people who are open to food businesses kind of were limited. The market changed, prices changed on a lot of things. And it became a little bit inexpensive for me to afford things. So I kind of like did a little research and kind of did the back end of it, tried to use my resources with the Ready program to get ahead, reaching out to see who can manufacture things for me to kind of like cut costs down. So it still panned out right, because in a couple of weeks I'll be open. So,
what keeps you motivated to work on Taste Buddies and to continue to go through? Because I know for some folks who start businesses, it's all about persistence and keeping up with it, because there can be so many hurdles on the way. How do you keep going?
I keep going because I think about those women that I was sitting in there with for 10 months that will see they again, be able to become a part of society again. I think every day about the knowledge that I learned from them, like the skills that I didn't have going into prison and the skills that I have now. So every day when I get up, I think about how I can't go back. But if I go back, I got to go back and spread good news of the good news of what I'm doing and what I've learned from the hiccup that caused me to have a halt in life.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's got to be hugely motivational for folks who are looking at you as an example of something that they can do. Have you heard from anyone that is hoping to follow in your footsteps?
So I do have business pages. I do keep in contact with a couple people that I was incarcerated with. I still go back to the Indiana Plan and speak because I did graduate from there, and I let people know, I spread the word. A lot of people have hit me on Instagram and Facebook and my messages like, hey, what can I do to do this? What can I do to get in this program? And I just give out my feedback.
So you mentioned earlier about the shared kitchen, I believe. What does that mean for you and your business?
So that means that the next step behind me coming with the shared kitchen is I will really have my own organization after that. I'll be able to save up the money to help me with marketing, help me with bringing on a team if I decide to have a team. It just will take me to another level to grow me outside of being an LLC into maybe a corporation or maybe taking me to a nonprofit or taking me to take Taste Buddies to another adventure of helping the community.
Well, since it's lunchtime somewhere at some time right now, what are some of the different food items that you offer just so we can get a little hungry here?
Okay, I'm sorry. I don't want to get you a little hungry. But if you are hungry, just save your taste buds if you have enough time for them. So on the salad side, I do have a Taste Buddy salad. I have a chicken salad with walnuts. I have a seafood salad. I have a perfect salad, which is just for vegans. And then I have a party salad. On the soup side, I have a corn, green bean, and bacon chowder soup. I have one sandwich for now, which is the Taste Buddies Attack. It's kind of like a breakfast sandwich. And then my desserts, I have a baby's girl nana pudding, which is my grandma's recipe, Boo's cheesecake, which is named after me, Heath bar jar, and a couple cobblers. So sorry to get you rattling, but I will send out my contact information if anyone wants to reach me. I am at tashina.clark@tastebuddiesllc.com. I am on social media with Taste Buddies LLC. If you have any questions or just you want to know something about life or just how I can get over or how you can get over the next step if you're going through something, I'm open.
Well, thank you so much. That's really kind of you to provide that support. And speaking of which, can you talk about issues of maybe accessibility you may have seen for formerly incarcerated folks who want to start a business? Does the READY program help them? Or I guess I'm wondering, does everybody have access to a program like that?
So, yes, everyone does have access to a program like that. And it's called research. And I'm not being funny about it. Because a lot of people, when they hear me name off a couple programs, it overlooks them. But when I tell people about Second Helpings, which I got the culinary experience from the Start Me, Indiana Plan, all of these programs are free. The READY program was free. It just took for me to apply 7 weeks, 2 weeks, 8 weeks to get to the next level in life. So what I do tell people is if you're looking for a change and you're ready for one, then one of those three organizations will get you jump-started. And I'm pretty sure if you tell them that I sent you, they really will get you jump-started. So,
yes, it's nice to have the connection, VIP. Yeah. So overall, though, do you think there are enough programs for formerly incarcerated folks to really make a life for themselves when they're out?
I think that there are a lot of resources. I just think that the stipulation behind it is there's not enough people trying to utilize the resources. Like I said before, you got to want it. They're not going to just tell you and knock on your door and say, hey, here's this opportunity. You got to go for it. At first I was scared and hey, I had to go for it. You know, change is good. A lot of people don't believe in change, but change is really good.
Well, is there any advice you would give to someone who maybe in the position you used to be in, where you said you were a little bit scared to start this business? How would you, I guess, push them to keep going?
How I push myself daily is my favorite scripture, and I learned this when I was incarcerated. It's 1 Thessalonians 5:16-18, and it states, rejoice always, pray continuously, and give God thanks in all circumstances, like no matter what. So I use that daily. Even when I'm mad, even when things aren't going my way, I just thank God because it could be worse. If you just stay humble, and stay passionate about going to the next level and taking the next step, it'll come. You got to have patience and just a little faith of a mustard seed, but it will come.
And it sounds like having that positive attitude, which is also important to kind of overcome the obstacles, which you definitely have. I can hear it in your voice.
Thank you so much.
Well, I definitely want to thank you for coming onto the program. It's been a pleasure to learn all about the business that you started, and we look forward to tasting some of your tasty bites. Tashina Clark, the founder of Taste Buddies and winner of the 2020 Reentry Entrepreneurship Development Initiative's Business Pitch Contest. Coming up next, we'll hear from an Indianapolis car club that isn't just about cars. If you have any questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. You can also send us a voice message through our free smartphone app. It's called All in Vox Pop. Just search for All in Vox Pop on your phone's app store. Send us your question or comment, and we'll try to get it on the show. I'm Miriam So. Back in 90 seconds, this is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Soeb. When you think of a car club, you might imagine that it's a place where car enthusiasts gather to share in their love of cars. But One Indianapolis Car Club is more than meets the eye. Speed Demons isn't just about putting on car competitions, but about giving back to the community. We're joined by Montrell Wilson, the president of Speed Demons in Indianapolis, and Johnny Stringer, vice president of Speed Demons. Welcome to you both. Montrell, let's start by giving us a rundown of what a car club is for those of us who are not car enthusiasts.
Our name is the Speed Demons. We are a group of car enthusiasts looking to make a change in the community through giving and support and donations.
And so what does Speed Demons do? Before we get into the community programs that you take part in, what, I guess, does a car club do in general?
We meet in various locations throughout the city. We are we all have common interests in enhancing our vehicles, keeping our vehicles looking good. But the car club is a entity under our not-for-profit, so they are basically kind of one and the same.
And how long has this car club been going?
At the end of this season, it will be 2 years.
So it's a fairly new organization. How did the passion come for putting together this car club that's also a nonprofit that helps the community?
What it has become now, the positivity and us growing with each other, making each other better in life, having fun with one another. We're a tight-knit group, and things like that is where the passion comes from. We all love giving back, and we all have common interests that pushes us to keep going.
Well, Johnny, what's your experience been like being part of Speed Demons?
My experience has pretty much been fantastic. I've had a great time, built a nice network of people, met new friends, built new relationships. It's been great.
How did you get involved with Speed Demons?
Riding around with one of my friends, seeing Trail the president riding around with his brother, and decided to meet up with them. And then from there, you know, we had a couple more friends come out with us, and we made a name, and then we figured we just might as well put a purpose with it for us to be out here. And that's how we pretty much got started.
Well, Montrell, where did your interest in cars come from?
I've had that all my life. Me and my brothers, we used to ride around the neighborhood on our bikes. We used to dream of having cars that we see coming through the neighborhoods that we have now, and that's a part of our group. So that passion and loving cars has always been there.
Johnny, what was it like for you? How did you get involved in cars?
I'll piggyback off of President. Pretty much growing up in the neighborhood, it started with bicycles. I had a lot of different bikes. Keep them clean, keep them nice, keep them up. Put different parts and modifications on them. And then as I got older, it just transferred over into a love for vehicles and cars.
It sounds like it's a lot of fun to kind of maintain and keep your stuff and add on to it. What would you say for somebody who is interested in getting involved, but they've never been a part of a car club?
For those who are not involved, it's a whole nother type of experience in life. Getting together with people with a common interest in itself is a cool experience that not many of us have having in the car community. There's not a lot of love out there for the car community, and we continue to try to shed light on that. To bring people together and just having a common interest, spreading positivity amongst each other, supporting each other in life. If you're looking for that type of environment, some type of car club and other types of car clubs have that type of environment.
Well, it sounds like, I mean, you mentioned having a common interest in coming together, and I know that you do community work. And so can you tell us a little bit more about the sort of community work aspect of this?
Our main goal is to improve the well-being of the economically disadvantaged through giving, support, and donation. That's our main goal and purpose of that role.
And how did you come about deciding that's what you wanted to do?
I believe it started off with my younger brother. He would go out every week with my younger cousins, and he would provide small meals for the homeless downtown. And one of our members, his name is Mike, he noticed that, and he said, why don't we go with him one time? And we all went out one time, and we enjoyed the experience. It's something that we decided to do again, and then it became a part of who we are, and we began to progress from there.
Johnny, what does a typical event look like for Speed Demons?
Oh, a great time. So, I mean, you get, come to, depending on what type of event it is. So, one we hosted was for the community. We did barbecue, bounce houses. Of course, you have the cars there as well. So you get to look at cars, have a good time, learn about cars. A lot of people, like you said, don't know too much about the car community. So that's a time where you can come out and actually get information on them, if you would like, learn more about them, and have a great time.
So just for my own curiosity, a car club, like, do you have car shows? Do you do car tricks? Like, what exactly is Speed Demons like?
Oh, definitely. We go to other events. We host our own. There's legal events that we attend. There's a group called the Roadhogs. I want to shout them out for continuously holding these events for people to come out in peace and fun to do these things legally. These type of shows, people come and show off their skills and their tricks.
And so can you sort of describe or set the scene for us, like, as if we were, if I went to a car show right now and watched tricks, what would I see? I'm just going to say donuts. Is that a car trick?
Yes, that is a car trick. They only allow experienced drivers out there, so there is no danger amongst the crowd, and they do all types of tricks. Like you said, there's donuts. People can do figure eights. People drift wide around. We call it the pit, is where the vehicles are that are doing these tricks. The energy out there is really high from all the fans and people that love to see what they're doing.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun just to watch all of that stuff going on. Johnny, if I wanted to do tricks, what would I have to learn?
You wanted to do tricks. I mean, pretty much. You have to learn how to control your vehicle. I mean, you have to learn how to control your car. I mean, it wouldn't take too long for you to get it. We have a teacher that'll teach you if you ever want to be taught. So, I mean, yeah, it's not difficult. It's just playing with the gas and playing with the steering wheel.
And you don't have to have, like, a special car that's, like, souped up or anything?
Not really. I mean, long as it's most people use sports cars, of course. And if you got rear-wheel drive, that's the go-to.
Well, Johnny, what's your experience been like so far with the events and the things that you've been doing and giving back to the community?
Like I said, again, it's been great. I've got to learn a lot. I've met a lot of people, built a lot of relationships amongst the 50 members that we just hit. Who's us? Overall, and it's a learning experience. I've done a lot of paperwork. We're trying to get our nonprofit side going, so been working a lot with the lawyers to get that paperwork pushed, and it's a learning experience, and I like it. You know, it gives me something to do, and it's a hobby. If people don't have hobbies, this is one that you can get into and enjoy it. And it's always something to do. We always host events. It keeps you busy. And like I said, a lot of the give back events is what I like to do the most. You know, like I like to see the smile on people's faces, or just knowing that we can change or keep someone going another day off of a meal is a good feeling to have, because a lot of people go without eating at nights. You know what I mean? So with us doing what we do and actually being able to provide to people that don't that can't or doesn't have the means, it's a good feeling.
Yeah, that's got to be rewarding to be able to enjoy your hobby, but also give back to folks and just see that you're making a difference.
Oh, yeah.
Montrell, when we talk about your car club, and it sounds like it's unique. I don't know if there's any other organization like yours in Indianapolis, but what would you say makes it stand out?
I would say organization, leadership, and just the love we show to everyone in the city, and how we stay on our target. We accomplish our goals that we set.
Well, if you're listening and you have any questions or comments for our guests, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana. Or you can leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. Again, that's 866-476-3881. We're speaking with Montrell Wilson, the president of Speed Demons in Indianapolis, and Johnny Stringer, vice president of Speed Demons, a car club that also gives back to the community. Montrell, you mentioned something earlier about a legal place for folks to do their car club stuff. It just made me wonder, like, is there an illegal way?
Yeah, there definitely are illegal ways or illegal things that people do, which creates the stigma in the car community, something that we constantly fight against.
So I guess I never knew that. I thought like anybody could just have a car club and get together. Is it that you have to get like permits or something to be able to gather in an area or something?
Basically, you would need waivers of private property.
Okay. Well, Johnny, do you have any favorite moments that you've been through this past year, or has the pandemic halted some of the activities?
No, I will say, well, the pandemic has not halted anything. I will say the proudest moment, again, I hate to go back to this. Proudest moments is, you know, the impact that we're making with through the feet in the homeless, because it definitely helps out a lot. And to actually see those people being fed and taken care of whenever we can is really, for me, that's my personal best feeling ever, because like I said, again, a lot of people don't get to eat, and that's a big thing. You know what I mean? So being able to do that is just like, it's a great feeling. And then another problem I would say is seeing the community events that we have and seeing the entire community come out and actually have a good time, and it's peaceful, no violence. That's what a lot of people need in the times that we're in right now.
Yeah. Everybody needs sort of a fun outlet that's creative and being able to just see at one another. And, you know, Montrell, I wonder, you know, the work that you're doing, I'm pretty sure people who have come out have been motivated to get involved in some way. Have you seen any of that from people who have come out and been surprised about the work that you do and then want to get involved?
Oh, definitely. There's been a lot of volunteers and a lot of organizations that have been interested and wanted to know more about what we are doing. There have been countless of times where individuals who will say that we have changed their perspective on things in life just by the positivity that we produce and do out there. From members to strangers, there's been individuals who say they're going to change their lives for the better or would like to do positive things on their own just based off of the impact of from the things that they have seen us do.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you're pioneers sort of paving this new path forward for folks. What do you hope this organization looks like in the near future?
We are looking to expand in our nonprofit area. At the beginning of the year, we acquired our licenses. We, due to the pandemic, a lot of local businesses and small businesses were shut down and things like that, and we weren't able to collaborate and helping within the community and giving out. to more individuals that are out there that need the support. So hopefully by the end of the year, we'll be able to reach out to these organizations and build relationships. And going into next year, we can build off of that.
Yeah, it sounds like it's only going up from here, just growing and seeing where else you can get involved and network with folks. Johnny, if people want to get involved with Speed Demons, what do they need to do?
They will just simply, you can reach out to the Speed Demons 317 Instagram page and express interest. Or you can reach out to a current member that you know around the community, and they'll give you the contact to reach out to. Nice sports cars, positive mindset, and willing to volunteer in free time is all we require, pretty much.
So anyone can be a member? They just have to sign up, or do they have to have some driving experience?
Oh, we definitely would like if you had driving experience. But like I said again, a nice sports car, positive mindset, and a willing to volunteer in free time is, I mean, that's pretty much it there. So,
yeah, so I guess I need to get a sports car at some point. Does a Honda Accord work as a sports car?
There's some nice Hondas out there. Don't count yourself out. But if you want to volunteer, just do volunteer work with us. You can also reach out to the SD Indy page and express interest in just volunteering. So, and that's where you can pretty much find out information about any give back events that we're having or community events that we're hosting.
Montrell, are there any events the Speed Demons are going to be hosting anytime soon?
Actually, on the 26th of this month, we'll be hosting a basketball tournament and barbecue for the community to come out. It will be hosted at Riverside Park. We'll be out there from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m.
And do we just show up, or how do folks get involved in that?
Yes, if you are in the Indianapolis area, or if you just want to come out from wherever you are, we will be at Riverside Park. It's a public park. You can just come on in. There will be tons of cars there. We are inviting everyone. It's going to be food. The competition is going to be there through the tournament, and we're just hoping to see everyone come out.
All right. Well, thank you both so much for joining us this afternoon. We really appreciate it. Montrell Wilson is the president of Speed Demons in Indianapolis, and Johnny Stringer is the vice president of Speed Demons. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Miriam Sobe. Thanks for listening. This is All In.